Welcome back to this week's Off the Bench podcast from the Premier League. I'm Gianni Battici from Fantasy Football Scout.
And I'm Praz from the FPL Wire podcast.
Wow, Praz, what a fantastic week it was for so many FPL managers. It was high scoring and it didn't disappoint, with over 477,000 playing their triple captain chip on Erling Haaland. I know you were close to that. Did you pull the trigger in the end?
I didn't pull the trigger in the end, and I wish I did, because it was a great week. Obviously, he did turn it on, which we know he can do in home games, and we'll talk about Man City a little bit. But I'm still very, very happy with my week. I scored 95 points without the triple captain. So, you know, a lot of these midfielders, which we were 50-50 on, all came through for me. Gordon with a 10, Smith Rowe with a 10, João Pedro with a goal against my own Man United team. But, you know, we take the FPL points, so... And I had Salah and Haaland. So very good week for me. How was your week?
I love that. Yeah, no, really happy too. 86. And yeah, I mean, it was a higher average than game week one. I think we saw a 69-point average. And we had a hat-trick from Haaland. I was expecting that to be the highest score of the game week, actually. And then up stepped Madueke with his 20-point haul. Palmer levelling Haaland 17 points. And Son with 16 points as well. So yeah, we've got loads to break down today. I guess we should start with Haaland, though. Given the fact he scored a hat-trick and so many went triple captain. Were you surprised that it was as many as 477,000? That's huge.
I think over the 24 hours leading up to the deadline, there was this momentum that was coming towards Haaland is fit. He doesn't have a midweek game. We don't have so many double game weeks to play the triple captain later. Why not just go for it? And this is where I was. And so I'm not that surprised. Like, usually in the seasons past, you'd be surprised that people have used it in a single game week, which for those that are listening is basically one game a week, which is the usual case. But later in the season, sometimes we get two games a week. But this was a great time and, you know, well done to those who did it.
Yeah, and fair play. I mean, great to see Man City go for an unchanged team. We've not seen that with Guardiola. The first time in 84 matches. So we've not seen that in a very long time. What was your take on other performers outside of Haaland? Because De Bruyne are popping up with goal contributions. There was obviously no Phil Foden. And it does feel like the squad is a little bit easier to predict at the moment because of the injuries and the lack of depth in some areas. Like, you know, Rico Lewis, for example, playing right back for the last couple of games has looked really good.
And he's been incredible. I mean, he had more penalty box touches in the game than Haaland, obviously hit that crossbar. Rico Lewis has been amazing, but you're absolutely right. I think the way City have started is ominous again for everybody, because, you know, they had Oscar Bob, who was looking amazing preseason. He got injured. Grealish played pretty much all of preseason. He's been out since the Charity Shield or Community Shield. And then you've got Foden, who fell ill, didn't play a minute. Some of the managers did go there, I saw, and that was very unlucky for them. But yeah, it does mean that you've got Doku and Savio as the two, you know, Savio is just Mahrez 2.0. So you basically have a lot of pace, a lot of good dribblers on the wings, which basically means defenders are always stretched. They're always worried about these guys. And then there's spaces up in the middle where De Bruyne is very happy to play alongside a Haaland and sort of, you know, make those chances, and Haaland is happy to put them away.
I do feel like, because everyone's got Haaland, when Man City score big, there's no real gain for us. And because of that, I'm always looking at, is there a second Man City mid I should buy to really make the most of those big scoring games? And I think De Bruyne is certainly on my mind. And Savio's interesting because he's cheap at 6.5. And you mentioned Mahrez, he does move. Yes, he's playing on the right-hand side, which helps. But the way he dribbles with the ball, he just holds himself like Mahrez. Loads of similarities there. And if he can produce similar FPL returns, maybe at 6.5, he could be one to consider. But he does feel like a min's risk, especially when Foden is fit and Bernardo's back up and running in full system. But yeah, De Bruyne at 9.5. He's gone up to 9.6, actually, De Bruyne. He has had a price rise. We've not seen him this cheap in a while. And he's combining well with Haaland and looks like he's playing really high up the pitch, almost second striker position, which hasn't always been the case with De Bruyne, has it? Like, we've seen him play that quarterback role in years gone by, but certainly the second half of last season and early this, he's really advanced.
I agree. Although, you know, once Europe starts, and this year, for those who don't know, Europe will start earlier because it's a longer Champions League format. In fact, it's a longer Europe format for everyone. I just worry that is De Bruyne going to keep consistently getting those same minutes that he's getting early season? I still think Foden is the second best pick from City. It's just that, you know, when will we get that Foden who was playing, you know, centrally Premier League player of the season last year? It is going to happen. It's just when is the question.
Yeah, I think I'm with you there. I'm a big Foden supporter, and I'm waiting for him to be back in that 11. With Haaland, I guess if we just summarise the thought of all the premiums delivering this season, which they are, like all the kind of expensive midfielders and forwards are delivering. And with that in mind, we thought maybe Haaland isn't a set and forget. We buy him early. We have game week 2 in mind with Ipswich, and we all need Haaland in our teams. But maybe if we need to jump on a Palmer or a Salah in game weeks 3, 4, 5, maybe Haaland could become someone we sell. That was certainly the viewpoint from many a few weeks back. But now that decision's a little bit harder, isn't it? Like, do we look at a Mo Salah in game week 4 and think, yeah, we get him in, but alongside Haaland? I know you have both, but many will have that compromise.
Yeah, I think it's hard. And we sort of knew this would be a problem, but we left it for, you know, game week 3, you know, let them deal with it. But now we're in game week 3. I think the logic is Haaland's got Arsenal, which is not an easy fixture in game week 5. Then he's got Newcastle away in game week 6. So you're thinking, maybe I can avoid it. But when Pep is coming out after the game and saying Haaland is looking amazing, last time when we won the treble, he came back very tired. These are quotes from him post-match. And then Haaland himself is saying, I feel really good. If you're getting 90 minutes consistently from the best attacking team in the league, and we'll talk about Liverpool who are coming close, it's just very difficult to go somewhere else. You know, it's you know, you could spread the money around and get a Watkins, but when we'll talk about Villa, we'll say, is he really a 90 minutes man yet? We'll talk about Isak, who's not looking great. So where do you actually go if you sell Haaland for that forward slot? That's one of the questions. But I think to answer your question more directly, it's very hard to sell him at the moment.
Yeah, it really is. It's almost like at the start of the season when we were planning maybe moving around our premiums, we assumed that Haaland wasn't going to go and score loads of goals in the first couple of weeks. But come on, it's Erling Haaland. Of course he was. And interesting Pep's comments about him being well-rested. Someone that I guess isn't. He didn't play a ton for England, but when you're away on international duty and you're missing pre-season, you have a shorter break. Someone like Ollie Watkins looks like someone that's going to take a while to get up and running. And he's missing big chances and not getting 90 minutes. Is it a little bit of an issue for many that thought by game week 3 they'd be buying an Ollie Watkins, because the Aston Villa fixture run is just so good? But maybe we don't need to go there now. And if you have, say, a Morgan Rodgers, you're still covering that Villa attack.
Awesome segment into the Arsenal Villa game. Well done with that. I think I completely agree with you. He should have scored at least one of those two huge chances that he had. Obviously, credit to Raya as well for saving that so header. Good. But that first chance that Rodgers made where Gabriel sort of lost possession, I think Watkins would have put that away 9 out of 10 times. So he does look a little bit rusty, and that is reflected in his minutes. He's been taken off before the 70th minute in both the games so far, of course, because of no preseason. He is somebody who is interesting, though. I mean, you know, when the narrative shifts where people say, maybe I don't need a Watkins, and then you watch the game and you say, he could have scored a brace last game, and then the narrative would have been very different. I think if people have the money, you know, if somebody has Isak and 0.5 in the bank, I think it's a tempting pick still, because as you said, the next 5 fixtures are absolutely incredible.
Yeah, they are. And it's tough to cover a talisman like Ollie Watkins, but it does feel like, just from watching the first couple of games, and if you watch pre-season at Aston Villa, then Morgan Rodgers might be able to cover some of those points. And he is playing 90 minutes, Morgan Rodgers. Emery clearly loves him. What a piece of recruitment. I think they paid around 8 million for Middlesbrough for this young attacking midfielder who ended the season so well at Villa last season. And many thought he probably would struggle to get in the 11, but Villa haven't recruited a huge amount in terms of attacking mids, and Rodgers has played himself in. And he's the one that's laying it on a plate for Watkins every time. I've got him as my 8th attacker, and I'm very happy making sure he starts now with the Aston Villa fixtures. And maybe if you own Rodgers, you don't feel the need to go to Watkins. But at 5 million, he's going to get a lot of love, isn't he?
He is. I mean, I think he'd be the best enabler in the game at the moment from an attacking enabler point of view. I have him as well. Very happy. I had him benched against Arsenal, but he actually had the most number of shots from Villa. In addition to creating those chances for Watkins, he also took some shots. They were admittedly like low XG shots, but still, he is getting in and around the box. He's playing the number 10 role, which is great for Villa. I mean, what else do you want? And the minutes, as you said, are incredible. I did not expect him to play 90-ish minutes. And going forward, I think people who are looking at him need to sort of rebalance their expectations as well. He may not play every game 90 minutes, but even if for 5 million you're getting the 70, 80 minutes, playing number 10 for Villa, who have great fixtures, I think he's a great pick.
Yeah. Is there any other interest at Villa, Praz? Because you and I both are always scouting for kind of the cheat codes of FPL, and we've got to be wary over these budget midfielders, and us Barco owners will know a lot about being wary there. But Kostas Nedeljkovic is, well, we think, going to be the starting right back for a couple of games. I mean, it's hard to know with Matt Cash's injury, but it looked like a hamstring, and there could be a $4 million gift here at right back for Aston Villa. And Emery has said that he doesn't see Konsa playing there, and Konsa is a centre back. That's good news for the young right back.
Yeah, it is. And it'll obviously depend on how long Matty Cash is out for, if we get some sense. And by the way, for people that don't know, there are some midweek games. Now, I don't think Villa has a midweek game, so let me just check.
Yeah, Chelsea have one on the Thursday night. So again, it's another opportunity to watch Nkunku and similar.
Right. So Villa don't have a midweek game because they're in Europe. So everyone who's in Europe is not playing this midweek game, apart from Chelsea. So we won't get to see the Villa, you know, another Villa press conference. We'll obviously hear from Emery on Friday. But if he's saying that Matty Cash is out for a long time, then Costa is a great pick at $4 million. But I think the consistent Konsa or Pau Torres for 0.5 million more, there's nothing wrong with them. I have Konsa on my bench who's ready to come on. But I do think people who don't have a Villa defender, again, it's a good run. You want to get good nail defenders or a defender with upside like this 4 million gift that has come about for this good fixture run, because, you know, we have lost a few defenders more recently. We've lost our favorite Barco, you know, Lewis Hall didn't play this week. We'll talk about Newcastle. So there are some places. Kwanzaa has lost his place. So there is a need for defenders. And I think Villa defenders will be high up in the shopping list.
Mm, so are Arsenal defenders always. We should have seen this coming, shouldn't we? Two clean sheets in two. Good chance of a clean sheet in game week three. I don't have an Arsenal defender or Raya, and I keep looking at my goalkeeper in Henderson and thinking, why didn't I find the extra million? Because Raya's been brilliant, and the new bonus point system seems to be working for Raya too. He's bonus in the first couple of weeks. If we're on wildcard now, you're probably going Raya, aren't you? But the fact of the matter is, most aren't on wildcard and most don't like to use goalkeeper transfers.
Yeah, it's one of those things. We are all the same watching Arsenal going, why don't I have an Arsenal defender? But the other side of it is, look, that, you know, it's not been the solid fortress that we've come to see last season. It's been a case that they have been a little bit lucky. They should have conceded against Villa. They're a solid team. They will probably be, again, the best defense this year. They play Brighton, Spurs and Man City in their next three games. So, yes, okay, Villa was also a fixture where they should have conceded, but actually they could have. So I think stay patient, let them play the three games, and then I would probably have double Arsenal defense from game week six onwards. That's the plan anyway. So I think patience is the way to go with Arsenal defense.
Yeah, of course. Game week five, I think it's Man City, isn't it? So it's a good opportunity to jump off and then or go without until the great run from game week six. In terms of great runs, let's move on to my man, Son Heung-min. He was so good against Everton. He played up front, and maybe that helps. I watched Son in game week one at Leicester. I sat with the Leicester fans as an owner of Solanke and Son. That could have been eventful, but both ended up blanking. But Son was so wide. And the more I watched Spurs under Postecoglou, he wants his wide men on the touchline. He wants chalk on their boots because the fullbacks are so inverted. Therefore, the width is created by a Brennan Johnson or an Odegaard, as we saw in game week two. When Son is in that role, he's still good because he's Son. He's still going to get you good FPL points, but he doesn't find himself in many good goal-scoring opportunities when he's playing so, so wide. And he probably can't rival a Palmer, a Foden, a Saka. But when he plays central, arguably he's as good at times better than some of the guys I've just mentioned. And I guess Solanke's injury is key to Son playing central, isn't it? So we just wait and see there. But he was really good against Everton. And I'd like to think, even though game week three and four are tough fixtures for Spurs, if Son's playing number nine, then he can score against anyone.
Yeah, I mean, we've always known this about him, that he's a lethal finisher. Mm-hmm. And him getting more chances is only good for his FPL pedigree. So I'm happy for you. Like, I think it's great for the game when, you know, Haaland, Salah, Son, Palmer, Saka all do well. Because that's the game. We can't have them all. And it's about picking the right picks, being patient if you've gone for one, not the other. Like, you could have easily said, I don't want Son. He's looking too wide. You could have gone, shifted to a Foden, had no points this week. So I think patience always pays off because good picks are priced in a way for a reason. And I think Son was great. And I think, you know, Spurs, we haven't really learned much from Spurs this year because they still create a lot of chances. They still will score goals, but they are also susceptible at the back. Sometimes you saw the Leicester game where in the second half, it was completely different. So I don't think we learned a lot in the Everton game, apart from the fact that Spurs defenders are actually okay. I mean, we've had a goal from Romero. We've had a goal from Porro. We've had an assist from Van de Ven. Udogie looks attacking. So even though they're not a great defensive side, I think their defenders are still good picks.
Yeah, no, yeah, and that they're really cheap because last season they struggled for clean sheets. To be able to get a Van de Ven for 4.5 that offers a bit of upside, yeah, that's great. His run for the Song goal was amazing. Yeah, Spurs definitely one to consider. It is more than just you know looking at Son. I mean, I think Madison has looked really bright and a little bit under the radar. He's of course 7.5, has a lot of the set pieces. It's going to be really interesting to see the dynamic there because there's so many good players. Like Dejan Kulusevski is not in the 11. Absolutely nailed, but when he looks great too. And he's, of course, really cheap at 6.5.
Kulu also played in the middle, which is something to monitor. Him and Madison haven't ever played in the middle before, or not a lot. And I think this is something even more attacking. So if you thought Ange couldn't get more attacking, it's even more attacking. And, the new signing Odebert also good high expectations coming in, and I think he was very good. So that team now has some depth in attack, even though Solanke was not fit. Richarlison didn't start. They still looked sharp. So it's a good attack to back at some point.
Yeah, like we talk about the front three at Spurs and then you go the middle three is one holder in Bissouma and Kulusevski and Madison in a central three. And you've still got two fullbacks that play as number 10s behind that as well. I mean, the all-out attack chip was meant to disappear from the Premier League years ago, but clearly it's back at Spurs. Yeah, and because we've always seen Papsar and Bissouma together, but clearly not. And I think Bentancur was out as well.
Yeah.
Should we talk Liverpool, Praz? Because they're a team that have to be on our radar, like for so many reasons. You went Trent at the start of the season, did you?
I have the triple up, Trent, Salah, Jota. Yeah. So I'm very happy with that.
Yeah, that's a great bit of business to go Jota and Salah, because many that did go Salah ignored Jota. And those that don't have Salah, most have Jota. But to have both is a really nice differential in itself. And I guess even no one's really on Diaz, but he's worth consideration too, isn't he?
Yeah, he's got everybody went Jota because of him always looking lethal, but Diaz he's been great. I mean, he's got the same number of bonus points. His XG created has been almost the same as Jota. And it does look like there's a settled front three now, even though they will get limited minutes. Both Jota and Diaz come off for Gakpo and Darwin Nunes. But if you're getting 70 odd minutes in two lovely fixtures like Ipswich that they had and Brentford at home, and the lovely fixtures continue for another three, four game weeks, then why not? I think doubling up on a very, very good attack. And so far in the first two games, they're clearly the highest in terms of the XG that they've created. They're 5.3 compared to Man City that are 4.1. Man United are third. But Liverpool, we knew under Klopp that they're an attacking side that has a lot of shots on target. They're highest for goal attempts even now. Is it the fixtures? Is it that Slot continues to play the Klopp way? Regardless, they're still good picks.
Yeah, I thought Slot was going to come in and I thought we were going to see the shot volume really dip at Liverpool. I thought we'll see clean sheets and we'll see more control and we'll see more possession and we're seeing all those things. But I thought because of that, we would see far fewer shots. But it's still like, yeah, loads. I mean, 5.31 XG in the first couple of game weeks. They're way clear of any other team. Liverpool at one, Man City at two with around one XG lower. So yeah, really impressive there from Liverpool in the first couple of weeks. Is knowing the front three won't get 90. I mean, even Salah might get an early sub or two, which is fine.
Yeah.
Should we look at and consider someone that is getting 90? He's 6.5 million. He's playing number 10. We're not talking about him because he hasn't been scoring goals and getting assists yet. But Dominic Szoboszlai is going to get them, isn't he? And at 6.5, a really cheap route to a sort of guaranteed starter that will often get 90.
I think he's a good pick. We did know that coming into it, that Slot does like a number 10, which Klopp didn't really like. And so we knew that this is something to watch out for. And we thought, is it going to be Szoboszlai? Is it going to be Elliot? Will they share minutes? It does look like it's Szoboszlai. And I think points are coming. I mean, it's just the fact that he's not yet taking the set pieces. He's given away all the corners to Robertson and Trent, who we will talk about. But I think as a pick, open play, I think he will be deadly. And I do think he may be even better when the fixtures are a little tougher, because he will be the link up between the defense and to the attack. And so he will be a pivotal figure. And I do think, you know, he's on every draft pick that I've played this year, because I do think he's a long-term good pick.
Yeah. Okay, I've got a question for you, Praz, because you own both. You can answer this fairly. If you don't own a Liverpool midfielder and you're shopping, but money's, of course, always tight, can you go Jota instead of Salah and save the 5 million? Or do you move heaven and earth to get Salah game week 4 because the fixtures are so good?
Look, I'm going to say you have to plan to get Salah. The reason being, in game week 5, you will struggle for a captaincy because Arsenal play Man City. And so you may have a Saka, you may have a Haaland, and that game we've seen traditionally is a dull affair. Now, we could be wrong this year, but you know, you can't rely on a captaincy for Haaland or Saka. So if you're sitting on those two, which are the two popular premiums at the moment, you need to be thinking about either a Haaland to a Salah with a double transfer or a Saka upgrade. And I think Saka upgrades are coming because you saw a lot of people had Solanke. They had to downgrade him to a Muniz, to a Pedro, to an Armstrong. A lot of people have Nkunku. We'll talk about Chelsea. A lot of people are downgrading him to a Rodgers. So money is coming back into the teams. And I think that money will go into upgrading a Saka to a Salah by game week 4.
Yeah. I think I'm with you there. And the Liverpool defence, couple of clean sheets. Didn't always get that under Klopp, like certainly no guarantee, but we're still getting all that attacking output from Trent, who was really close to getting bonus points on Sunday. If he had played another 5 or 10 minutes, he almost certainly would have got 2 bonus points, but he didn't. He came off just after 70, which is great because he banks the clean sheet quite often. And we've seen early subs a couple of times with Trent, and Bradley is a very good young right back. Early subs might be something we see a little bit more of with Trent, and that could minimise his BPS. But again, there'll be games Liverpool concede late, Trent comes off with a clean sheet point, and Liverpool then go and concede, and Van Dijk loses his clean sheet. So what do you make of the early subs? I mean, he's still the best defender in the game by a distance, isn't he?
I'm going to go out and say he probably is the best pick in the game with the fixture that they have. Because even though, you know, Liverpool didn't threaten as much after the goal, he was still so attacking, always crossing the ball. He will get assists. He will be there. And if he's only a million more than a Saliba or a Gabriel, I'm very happy to pay that million, because I think the bonus potential, the set pieces with the corners that he's taking, the free kicks, the direct free kicks, and the open play threat, he's just an amazing pick for 7 million. So I think, to answer your earlier question, if actually you don't have a Salah or a Trent, I'd prioritize Trent even before you get to a Salah. That's how highly I think of him and his potential in the next 3-4 game weeks.
Yeah, I mean, game week 1 as well, he had an 8-pointer because he got a couple of bonus points. But again, no assist. He's still not had an assist despite huge amount of chance creation. I think game week 1, that 2 big chances created, he had that Jota headed miss was such a big chance. So yeah, points are coming, even if he has had a 76 and a 71, still fine. And yeah, Trent's very exciting. And Liverpool, as we said earlier, they're going to keep clean sheets under slot because they have a little bit more control. It's a little less end-to-end that you perhaps used to see with Jurgen Klopp, where it was a lot of big chances conceded too.
And also, word on Robertson also looked incredible. Yeah. Again, 6 million, similar price to a Guardiola and a Saliba, Gabriel. I think, again, with good fixtures, if you don't have your third, like a lot of people are looking at Jota, Salah, Trent, if you don't have your third, I think going for a Robertson to pair with a Trent even is not a bad shout. He was also on corners. And we've seen in the past where Trent is more assist threat, Robertson had goal threat. I mean, he had a couple of great chances in the game. So I was watching and saying, I've locked myself out of Robertson here. Maybe it's short term, but I don't like it because Robertson looked incredible as well. So I'm really high on both Trent and Robbo. You know, it's basically back to FPL 2018, 2019. I think both are good picks.
Yeah, so true. I think for me, I might not go down the Salah route, Praz, which I know is scary for captaincy, but if you've got that Haaland team and you don't think you can find a way of finding the extras, going double Liverpool defence and say a Jota, so Robbo, Trent and Jota, might be fine, might be good.
Might be fine, yeah.
Might come with more with more rewards than Salah and obviously money in the bank, but there's certainly more than 3 good Liverpool options in FPL, because then you put in Diaz and Szoboszlai into the mix as well as the guys we've just mentioned. You know, if you could have 5 Liverpool players right now, you probably would. Yeah, really interesting how well they're performing and the fixtures are there for them. So yeah, watch this space with Liverpool. Another watch this space team for me is Brighton, who have a tricky game week 3, but then game week 4 or 5, I think it's homes against Ipswich and Forest.
Yep.
And Brighton have just been super impressive, both at the back, but offensively too. And the likes of Minter at 5.5 has obviously caught many managers' eyes. Matoma's at a price rise. He's 6.6 now, but João Pedro and Welbeck playing well. Brighton deserve our attention. And I think knowing the fixtures in 4 and 5 are so good, yes, Arsenal is game week 3, but you could still go and Nkunku to Aminta in game week three, and I think rewards would be just around the corner. What was your take? Because you would have watched that Brighton United game closely, I guess.
And I think another team, a bit like Liverpool, where the manager has changed, but the team looks the same. Like, you know, the talent is still there. They're all players who are used to playing under a system. And so I think with Brighton, it's the same case where not a lot of personnel have changed. In fact, they've been revitalized with important players coming back from injury. Like Mitoma is huge. Like, how much do you value a new Mitoma, like who's missed almost half the season last year? So yeah, they look incredible. I think they're fast off the break. They know how to hold possession. They know how to break press. And all of those are really important traits in modern football. So I think against Man United, there were moments where they were right on top. But there were also moments where Man United took control and you know, they probably should have scored the second goal, that Xerxes knee goal that stopped Garnacho from scoring. But I do think from a Brighton perspective, very, very optimistic. And as you said, I think we need to be planning to get more Brighton for Game Week 4 and 5. And they're so cheap that you can use Brighton as an enabler to get the bigger Liverpool guys. So like I said, you could go for Solanke down to João Pedro, you get your Brighton attacker, and then you have money then to take a Saka or a Son up to a Salah if you wanted to do that. Or you could do something else, you could get your defender up to a Trent. So I think you could use Brighton really smartly to fund other good moves. So you get a good player from a Brighton team, and you can afford more expensive players in your team. So I do like Brighton a lot.
Yeah, I do. A bit like Liverpool, there'll be a lot of rotation. Maybe not rotation, but there'll be a lot of early subs. There'll be a lot of attacking subs. So you look at someone like Minta and you know Adingra is going to get minutes too, and they'll share minutes. But maybe that's fine. And again, even João Pedro and Welbeck, you know, there's Rutner who's just come in, but also up front, Ferguson will be round soon. So the depth there is really impressive for Brighton. And yeah, you might get a lot of 70-minute performances from your starters. But if they're playing really well, don't be put off by those 70-minute performances. You say the same for Liverpool with, say, a Jota or a Trent. Like 70 minutes is fine if they're playing in a really good, well-functioning team that's scoring goals. And Man United, Praz, Bruno owners, I mean, they've been really unlucky the first couple of game weeks. Like he's been, it feels like he's been robbed of a couple of big, big points. And Eze are the same. I think those two midfielders that have both been popular have been the biggest underperformers of expected goal involvement in the first two game weeks. So, yeah, unfortunate if you went there, but I guess points are due because they're just proper good FPL options, Eze and Bruno.
Yeah, and you know, those who haven't watched the first two games of Man United may say, okay, it's the same old Man United. But I think, now this is not fan bias, I genuinely think that the team has started well. Yeah. And I think there is a system where the way they're carrying the ball, the defenders are better when Martinez plays, they do improve. The midfield, you know, so far Casemiro is doing well. Menu is set for another good season, I think. So I think that team is fine. And I think if you've gone for a Bruno, you don't have to panic. Yes, you've been very unlucky, but this is a better Man United team. Now, the fixtures aren't as amazing as if you remember last season, where the first eight game weeks for Man United were incredible. People were on Rashford and Bruno. I think this year it's slightly different, where you could go for Bruno because points are coming. And I think have a little faith in Man United. I think as a fan, even though we lost the game against Brighton, I do think there are good signs for this team, especially if we sign an Ugarte or somebody in that number six position. I think we're okay. It's an okay season coming. It's not a disappointing one, I think.
In attack, other than Bruno, though, is it still a wait and see on some of the wider forwards? So like a lot will look at Ahmad and see a couple of starts, but maybe that feels like a transfer out waiting to happen because Garnacho hasn't been getting the starts. Do you just wait and see on those wide forward slots? And if you want to invest in the attack, just find the extra to go Bruno?
I would think so. I think Garnacho is a close second at the moment because I think Garnacho has been, obviously he played the Copa America, so he was late coming back. I think eventually it'll be his place, even at the expense of Rashford, I would say. I mean, it's not easy to say that, but I think at the moment he's playing better than Rashford. And I think in the next game, I do expect Ahmad and Garnacho possibly to start. Maybe it's Rashford up top or it's Rashford who misses out. We don't know. But I think Garnacho has had two very good sub appearances, should have scored in this game. So I do think would be my second pick, but it's a little early to go there because you could get another sub and that's not ideal.
Yeah, okay. I do like Garnacho. Every time I watch Garnacho, I just think, you find a way of clocking so many big chances. Like for a wide forward, big chances fall his way for a reason because he works a lot of them for himself. He is 6.5 million, guys. And if you are looking for an Nkunku replacement, then yeah, Praz highlights the Liverpool game and of course, maybe not a guaranteed start. But Garnacho's 15% owned. Southampton and Palace just around the corner. 6.5 million. Yeah, could be a load of fun. But of course, it comes with a huge amount of risk in terms of guaranteed starts at the moment. And if we're talking about Nkunku, Chelsea, we didn't see that coming, did we? We just thought he was going to be nailed. Just a guaranteed starter.
I mean, this is how things change in FPL, right? I mean, early preseason, he was scoring goals. He was getting 90 minutes in preseason. Who sees the fact that he doesn't even play 60 minutes in the Premier League? You know, like, it has completely changed. And he obviously played the Conference League game midweek on the Thursday. But even then, he was taken off on the 58th minute. So the expectation was he plays on the left. He goes out and says, Maresca says, Neto isn't ready to play. And then, you know, João Félix is there or thereabouts. They're all getting minutes and Nkunku isn't. I mean, it's incredible how that pick has changed. You know, I genuinely thought he was undervalued at 6.5. He could have been valued at 8. Or a Bruno price, and you would have said, yeah, that's fine. It's a good attacking play for Chelsea. But if you don't have minutes, it shows any player is useless if you don't get minutes. And so far, Nkunku hasn't got the minutes. So it's very difficult to say that he will in the future.
Yeah, and we still don't know his best position. Like, he played a lot of minutes pre-season as like an attacking number 8. And then game week 1, we saw him out on the left. And then we see Maresca pick his team for game week 2, and rather than go for Palmer on one side and Nkunku on the other, which is what he did game week 1, who are both players that want to cut inside, he went for out-and-out wingers, which again, a little bit like we mentioned about tactically Spurs. Postecoglou wants the wide men on the touchline because the fullbacks don't do much of the width. And under Maresca, I think he also wants his fullbacks fairly narrow. So with that in mind, yes, I can see why Mudryk got the start game week 2. I can absolutely see why Madueke got the start game week 2. And if that's going to be a pattern moving forward, then I don't think Nkunku is going to be considered much as a left winger. Maybe we will see Nkunku's minutes more central. Or maybe we see Nkunku's minutes even as a number 9, where he has played in the past, not much at Chelsea. But if Jackson's scoring goals, obviously Palmer's playing 10 now, or did in game week 2. And I think we just saw game week 2. Why Palmer under Maresca shouldn't play wide.
Yes.
Palmer under many managers can play on the right because he can cut in, but not if he's being told to stay on the touchline. That's a waste of Palmer's talents in central positions. Right. So it feels right to go with 2 out-and-out wingers for Cole Palmer, but then that leaves this big space of going, okay, how and where does Nkunku ever fit? Because I think a midfield 3 of, say, Palmer and Nkunku and only one holder would be far too offensive for Maresca. Might not be for Ange Postecoglou, but it's for Maresca. So yeah, it's tricky, and he does feel like a sell, and he's been super popular. Would you look at Madueke, Praz? It's same sort of price point. I mean, he's 6.5 and Cuckoo's dropped 6.4, but it's only one good game, and you never know with Chelsea because there's so many good players, but he feels like he could have played himself in, but hard to know for sure.
Hard to know for sure. And you've just named about 8 players that could play in 3 positions. So, you know, you didn't even talk about João Félix or Enzo, who could play, you know, centrally as well. So I just think with midweek games, with Maresca trying to figure out his best team, it's just not, it's a no-go. I would say apart from Palmer, there's not one player I can say that will start consistently in that team in the, you know, in midfield or forward position. So I just don't think you go there. I mean, this may change after 5 weeks if, you know, like we've changed with Nkunku. This isn't reactionary. It's based on information we have now learnt over the last 2 game weeks. If we learn something different in the next 3-4 game weeks and he does prefer Neto on the left, who's doing well, or Madueke on the right, maybe we change our mind, because then that would also mean Palmer playing more centrally. But there are just too many people at the moment that are really incredibly good footballers, and you can't see them all missing out and not playing, not getting starts consistently.
Honestly, I'm just relaying that conversation we're having back in my head from the last couple of minutes, and I'm going around in circles, as you mentioned, just naming all those players, thinking of all the possible combinations. And it's so up in the air at the moment with Chelsea, one, because of the squad, but two, it's a manager we don't know a ton about. I don't know for sure he wants his wide men always wide. I'm guessing that because they look good against Wolves in game week 2, but maybe he will at times go for Palmer and Nkunku with more control and cutting in. I still want to know what's going on with the number 9 at Chelsea, because they haven't bought, and I don't see Jackson as like an absolute set and forget in this Chelsea team. And at the moment, it's Jackson or, well, there's no other option. So does that leave a space for Nkunku at some point? I don't know. As you say, every week or every 3-4 days, we're going to get more and more information, which is why I didn't knee-jerk sell Nkunku despite seeing he was going to drop in price. Again, Thursday tells us a little bit more, and maybe if you can go another couple of days, you gather more intel, whether it's press conference quotes, performances in the Europa League or indeed another Premier League round. But yeah, information is going to be key with Chelsea.
Yeah, and the other thing to round off Chelsea is basically, so far, you know, if you're trying to use the prototype of a Pep and an Arteta, because Maresca's from the same school of thought, you know, same assistant manager type of thing,
yeah,
that defensive control just isn't there. It just looks so open at the back. It's mainly because people are getting used to the system, so mistakes happen, gaps are left behind, and then you can see chances. Like, in fact, in this game, ironically, Wolves had a higher XG than Chelsea, even though Chelsea was so clinical, you know, they kept getting, give Palmer the ball. He drives into their box, gives it to Madueke. He shoots and a goal. I think it, you know, the six goals did flatter Chelsea quite a bit in terms of this game, if people didn't watch it. So again, I'm still learning about Chelsea. I'm still learning about their players. I'm still not going there in terms of their defense, because their defense is cheap. Their defenders, you know, like a Colwill, a Sanchez, could come into the reckoning at some point, because we do see some consistency there. But at the moment, I just don't know if he can go there apart from Palmer.
Yeah, I think I'm with you. And Palmer just is proving to be still worth that huge price tag. Like, what a player. And if he keeps playing centrally in the 10, he's going to get loads of goals and assists. And this is Palmer away from home as well, in like a chaotic Chelsea team with no rhythm. When you look at good fixtures with home runs, when Chelsea have got a little bit more consistency, he's going to absolutely shine. A team that aren't shining, Praz, and we're stacked up on Newcastle, you and I. I don't know many that have got Isak and Gordon, and both of us punted there, and it's been fine. And Gordon's 10-pointer, you know, matched Mo Salah's on Sunday. But Newcastle don't seem to be passing the eye test, do they? And their data's not brilliant either. When I look at the sort of XG totals for game week 1 and 2, we expect to see Liverpool and Man City right at the top. But down in 16th, in terms of the expected goals in the first two game weeks. 16th for Newcastle. I mean, Arsenal was surprising in 14th, but Newcastle in 16th, you expect more from that attack.
You do. I mean, I'm very conflicted on Newcastle, to be honest. You know, like, they have had one home game in which they lost a player in the first half. They've had a second home game in which they've played away to Bournemouth. And I'm very, very big on Bournemouth. Not from an FPL point of view necessarily, but just I just think that that's a team that is looking good under a new manager. Not a new manager, but a manager that has had their second season now. And yeah, I just think that it's a team that will be hard to beat, especially at home. So this is going to be a theme where if teams are going to Bournemouth, it's not going to be an easy game. So on one side, I want to give Newcastle a little bit of leeway and say, one tough game at home with 10 men and one tough away game. So hold on, stay patient. And the other one is, they've had all these players back. Joe Linton is back. Pope is back. They should be looking good. Gordon is fit. Isak is fit. But we haven't seen it. And the shot volume, like you said, the XG created has been 16th. The goal attempts are 19th. The only team below them is Ipswich, who've played Liverpool and Man City in the first two games. So it is a little bit of a worry, especially when you double up in attack. But then for you and me, I mean, if you look at more pragmatically, everyone knows Isak. So actually getting points from Gordon wasn't the worst, and the Isak blank wasn't the worst. But people will be thinking, if they have some money in the bank, to upgrade an Isak to a Watkins who has those great fixtures. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I like it. I think if we assume Watkins is now ready for 90 minutes, which you'd think by game week 3 he probably is, of course he didn't have a pre-season. If we're targeting fixture runs, then yes. Newcastle, Spurs, however, I think comes with goals. But if you're on Gordon, then maybe you don't need Isak and Gordon. So if you don't have a fire to put out, then Isak to Watkins was one many thought they would make come game week 3 pre-season. But now maybe that narrative changes a little bit, because Watkins hasn't been getting 90, and just because the sheer volume of errors we probably made pre-season with picking players like Barco, where you go, actually, I need to make a budget defender transfer, which I didn't think I'd have to make, or having to sell an Nkunku because he's now not playing. So it depends on the fires you've got to put out, I guess. But if you've got that luxury, I like that, jumping on Watkins purely for that fixture run. It's a great run for Watkins. And it feels a little bit differential in terms of engaged managers, because most have ignored him early on for obvious reasons. I tell you what, Praz, another forward I do like, because you just mentioned Bournemouth, and it's Ivan Ilsson, who has been signed for big money. He'll be on penalties. He's playing the same role as Solanke, who was priced rightly at 7.5 million. Ivan Ilsson playing the same role, possibly a similar style forward that will produce similar output, is only 6 million. I like that shout very much. He got an hour at the weekend. He'll be ready now. He's ready now to start. The Bournemouth fixtures are all right. I mean, Everton defensively have been poor. Chelsea defensively have been poor. They're the 3 and 4 fixtures and might just be a bit of an under-the-radar pick for those that are looking for a budget forward that's not named Maniz or João Pedro or Armstrong.
Yeah, I like that shot. He's definitely one on my radar as well. I just need to see the pens. You know, like Kluivert is good at pens. Semenyo is okay. He has got a decent penalty record in the past. So I do think he may take them, but I want to just see it. And I think as a pick, once he gets minutes, if he's playing the same minutes as Solanke, if he's playing the same role, there's no reason why he's not a great pick. It is actually a great year for cheap forwards. It's why the game has been priced really well. Another shout out to FPL for creating a really good pricing structure where you have clear three tiers in terms of, you know, your expensive Haaland. And then you have the mid-priced guys with the Havertz, the Isaks, the Watkins. Solanke is now in that as well. And then you have the cheap forwards who, you know, if you can get to the right cheap forward, which can afford 2-3 big hitters, then the cheap forwards can keep up with the others if they're getting pens and they have a good fixture run. So there's so many ways to play the game that I'm really excited. And Ivan Nilsson is one of those where I definitely think will be in our teams when the fixture run improves. Or even now, like you said.
Yeah.
So finishing up on Newcastle, I think one of the things that also happened was Lewis Hall, who was a popular game week one pick, didn't start. And I was actually quite disappointed. Like, speaking to Newcastle fans, there was this sense of, you know, he had a difficult game against Southampton, but, you know, Eddie Howe will give him another chance. He had a great preseason, but I was disappointed not to see him start. Now he goes on to play Spurs. What are you doing with Lewis Hall?
I don't think I'm going to move him on because I hope that it was a tactical thing. And also, Newcastle were poor in game week two. I'd like to think he comes back in. But it's a bit of a lottery. And I must admit, I didn't see Lewis Hall as a really risky pick. I knew there was a bit of risk there. But because he ended the season so well last year at left back and he played so well pre-season at left back, I just assumed he was going to be in straight from the top. And of course, game week one, he wasn't brilliant. But yeah, fingers crossed he stays. There are other good 4.5 options out there. It's just I don't see myself being forced to make a transfer just yet. One more week, maybe.
I'm the same. So like we've said, there is a Carabao Cup this midweek for Newcastle. We can watch them there. I'm planning to bench him in the Spurs fixture. And then so that's two good clear windows where you can see him, where you can see if he's getting the minutes. And then I will probably either keep him or turn him into a Lewis Dunk or something. So that's basically my plan. But on the Newcastle assets, I think one thing we also didn't say is that Highland against Spurs, it's not the worst to keep your Gordons and your Isaks.
Yeah, true. Yeah, exactly. I remember that fixture from last season. I think Newcastle maybe scored 5-odd goals at St.
That was the year before, but even last year they scored a lot.
Was it? Yeah. So it's clearly one with goals, which we like. And look, Newcastle at St. James's Park are a different proposition. And I think we know that from last season. Like, it's a very different Newcastle team when they play at home. Perhaps more different than the vast majority of Premier League teams, their home form. Right. Those budget defenders, if you are looking for a 4.5 million, I can highly recommend a guy that I did buy last week because I had to sell Kwanzaa. Gosh, so many issues pre-season with my selection. The guy Kwanzaa, Lewis Hall, Barco we've discussed, and Kunku, all these players we didn't think were that risky, were turned out to be really risky. But I went to Anthony Robinson, who got a couple of bonus points and an assist, and he looks great for Fulham. And Fulham still are in this really nice fixture run, and Smith Rowe owners and Maniz owners, but Robinson owners too, I think are all due some points.
Yeah, and their fixtures, you know, even after this Leicester game, are really, really good. They go on to Ipswich and then they have two home games. So, I had Robinson from the beginning and I think he's playable in all of the next four fixtures. So very, very high on him. He could have had another assist, that chance that Muniz missed. So I think Muniz owner is a little bit unlucky. Robinson got two bonus, got an assist despite a clean sheet getting 7 points. He basically outscored Gabriel. I think he's a really, really good pick. If you're looking for a 4.5, he's probably at the top of my list at the moment.
I think it just shows the defenders with upside are always worth that extra consideration. Fulham don't need to clean sheet for Robinson, for example, to get a good return. And if you watched him pre-season, you'll know how much license he has to get forward on the left. But you're right, that cross for the Maniz header was so accurate. And Maniz, just the wrong side of the post, I think it was. But yeah, definite watch list player if you don't own him there.
And they'll only get better with the Birch signing and the Anderson signing. So only looking better at Fulham.
yeah, like that, spending a little bit of money in the back. And yeah, we know from Silva, he's a very good manager that can produce some clean sheets, but also, you know, entertaining football with upside.
Palace, what did you make of them? Two losses in a row?
Didn't see it coming. I thought Palace ended the season so well last year. I thought they would hit the ground running. But you look at some of the players that may be on their way out or that have already left, and yeah, they may be a little bit short and maybe confidence is a little bit low there, but there's still so much quality on the pitch. The likes of Munoz and Eze were popular FPL picks. I still don't think you knee-jerk sell them. Let's give them a little bit more time. Patience might be rewarded here. Eze's been so unlucky. I don't know how he hasn't scored yet, and he's still playing very well. And that should be the really important thing. It's like, okay, yes, he's not at the points yet, but he's still getting the chances. He's still producing the output. He still looks very good.
I would definitely stay patient with Eze if you can. If you can, even if he drops in price. Like, I'm actually looking to go Gordon to Eze. So, you know, when I see people selling, I'm like, look, I made a mistake not going for Eze because he's looked incredible. 6.9 million, I'm there. So definitely stay patient. But look, we have to acknowledge the fact that it is a worry that Palace are losing players. You know, like if they've lost Anderson, they've lost Olise, there's still bids around for Gehi. So we need to watch. And by the way, the transfer window shuts before game week 3. So one to monitor if they lose more players, if they do fill others. So Palace are a little bit of a question mark. And like you said, we didn't expect it. But sometimes these things happen. That's why every new season is different. But I would stay patient on them, like you mentioned.
I'm a bit nervous the Henderson decision, I think, will prove to be a slight misjudgment. But let's see. I don't think I'll be making a goalkeeper transfer until I wildcard. But Henderson, I'm not sure clean sheets are as guaranteed as we perhaps thought, especially, as you say, with Anderson. But Gehi potentially off as well. It clearly is going to make them weaker defensively.
Fair enough. Excellent. So with 2 weeks of matches under our belt, we will now have a good feel for who the weakest spots are in our teams. But if those plans involve investing in Chelsea, you might want to hold fire until their Conference League qualifier on Thursday evening and all the other teams that are playing in the Carabao Cup. So do wait if you can.
Yeah. I think points over pounds here, for those that are worried about things like price drops, points and information, clearly, I think might be key this week. But wherever your transfer plans are, don't forget to join Kelly, Jules and Sam on the FPL pod on Thursday, as they'll be looking ahead, of course, to game week 3.
And if you haven't joined the league, join the FPL pod mini league. The code is Q7YCO0.
Good stuff. Well, lovely to chat, Praz, and I look forward to seeing you again next time. Hopefully we'll be chatting off the back of another big green arrow, because our scores this week were pretty impressive. Happy with that?
I loved it. I haven't been on here with a good score, so I really enjoyed it. Thank you, Gianni, for a lovely chat.
Yeah, see you, mate. Bye-bye, guys.
Bye.